This episode of Ear Buddies is brought to you by Bath & Body Works. Bath & Body Works and Netflix join forces to bring fragrance and beloved stories to life for consumers and fans of, you guessed it, Bridgerton Season 3. It's Bath & Body Works. A runner-up on The Voice.
And I'm Lewis Capaldi.
This is Ear Buddies. Hey, buddy.
Hey, buddy. Wow, I didn't plan on doing that, but it just, you know, sometimes the spirit strikes and you do a bad Scottish accent.
Lewis Capaldi? Listen, we'll talk about him later. Right now, pal, we really, I mean, if we're a music podcast, we need to say just a little bit of something about Beyonce.
This ain't Texas. Ooh. Ain't no hold'em. Hey. So lay your cards down, 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 down.
So, Matt, I open the floor to you. Cowboy Carter, here it is. Lay it on us.
Oh, buddy. Here's the thing about it, I guess, Tim. Everything has been said.
Thank you.
That's all, right?
Thank
is that
you.
Not so true?
Both in the lead up and now that the album is out, there's nothing more to say.
Yes.
Certainly nothing that Maddie and Timmy.
No. Ear Buddies is not and never has been and never will be in the business of rehashing cold potatoes. Like, it's off. Like, our opinions on this are moot.
Yeah.
This right. It's not, no, you don't want to hear
you
Matt
don't
and Tim say anything about this.
What do we think about the Jolene cover? Look, it's everywhere.
It's everywhere. Yeah.
So now that that's out of the way, you and I are chart guys, wouldn't you say? We're big chart
charts,
heads.
Charts, graphs, data, stats, analytics, the back Whoa. End, the front end, absolutely.
That's right. Next gen stats, Maddie and Timmy. We are just glued to billboard.com/hot100. We gotta know what's hot, what's not.
It's use.
Yeah,
it still has relevance as a metric. Mm-hmm. That's what I'll say. There you go. Continue,
sure.
Please.
Well, right now, what the graphs and charts are telling us, Matt, is that the number one song in the United States of America is "Lose Control" by Teddy Swims.
I'm falling apart right in front of you. Can't you see?
And you hear the song and you go, ooh, what a voice. And then you look and see, what's the number two song right now? Oh, it's Beautiful Things by Benson Boone. That's a boy's name.
These beautiful things that I've got, please stay. I want you, I need you, oh God, don't take.
When you hear that guy singing, you think, what a voice.
Yeah, you do think that.
And because of this confluence of events, Matt, because of these amazing singers soaring to the top of the charts, I think it's time that we talk about big voices.
We could have had it all.
Yes. Now that is something that Ear Buddies and Ear Buddies alone can handle.
That's right. This is something we can get our arms around, right?
Mm-hmm.
Big-time singers who can dazzle you, can do anything. They're a mainstay of popular music.
Yes, they're a mainstay of American culture. It is quite literally an industry.
Right. I mean, since, like, when? The 70s or 80s or, like, Star Search dates back quite a ways.
Yes.
From Hollywood, the entertainment capital of the world, it's the 1986 competition of Star Search.
And that tells us something about all of us. It tells us that we love it when singer goes high.
Mm. Why do you build me up? Build a cup, baby, just to let me down. Mess me around and then worst of all.
We love it when singer does loud run, right?
Yes.
Whistle tones. Give me those belts.
Yes, a sustained note with some vibrato just right at the end. Oh, buddy. 20 seconds if you can do it. Come on.
That's the bread and butter of pop music. That's, well, no, it's not, actually. I would argue it's like the chocolate cake.
Absolutely, yes. Yes.
The bread and butter of pop music, of course, Matt, is... Go ahead.
It's the 1, the 4, the 5, and the 6.
Bingo. Bingo. 4 chords, baby. We're talking about incredible vocals. You could hear me say that and think that, yes, I'm about to do a sort of Seinfeldian, what's the deal with great singers? And that's not what we're doing exactly. But I want to meditate with you, Matt. I want to ruminate with you on why we love big, loud, high singers so much as people.
Mm. Love that.
What is that?
Great concept.
What does that do for us, you know, spiritually? What does it do in our little brains?
Yeah. What does it do to music? What does it do to the culture?
Exactly. Because, Matt, the collective consciousness of pop music is a finite space.
Yes.
Right? And any given tune is a very finite space. What I mean by that is you can't do everything everywhere all at once. Every single element of a tune cannot be at a 10.
Mm-hmm.
I've been thinking a lot about like the capacity of pop music.
Like writ large or like per song?
Per song, really.
Mm, yep.
Let's talk about the tunes, buddy.
Sure, I'd love to. You know me.
What I mean is when let's take Lose Control by Teddy Swims, huh? Let's
sure.
Do this. Okay.
Something's got a hold on me lately, though I don't know myself anymore.
I don't know if I've ever heard a more runner-up on American Idol voice.
Oh, and how.
By that I mean it's great. He sounds amazing. He's offering us here a soulful 6'8 thing, and he's showing off his range, and he's got this big chorus.
From tapping the skin off my bones, don't you know I'm
runs, it's flashy, it's interesting, the vocals are very interesting, but there's not a lot really to say about anything except the vocals in this song. That's subjective, of course, but I guess I come away from this, and I come away from a lot of tunes by, say, John Legend, or Adele, or Kelly Clarkson, or Lewis Capaldi, Matt.
Sure.
And the only thing I can really say is these vocals are amazing. And they're mixed beautifully, and they sound perfect, and they're great, and they're loud. But I don't come away sort of feeling like there's anything else to grab onto in the music. Am I barking up the right tree? What do you think, buddy?
Okay, pal. This is, I believe, the right tree to be barking up. It's a tough line to walk a little bit because, like, we're not knocking at all the actual talent of and the ability, the sheer athleticism of these vocalists. But it just is like, at its worst, at its most American Idol runner-up, it has so little to do with the tune as a whole. Mm-hmm. And it almost becomes like an exercise that we as the listeners are just observing somehow.
Sure.
Do you know what I mean? Like, and that's putting it a little harshly, but sometimes I think that is deserved. It's just for show in some way.
Which is not a bad thing. I want to reiterate, I'm with you, buddy. I'm not trying to throw shade at Teddy or anybody here. Like, it's good. It sounds really good.
It does.
I think, American Idol maybe, exacerbated this.
Mm-hmm.
This idea that at any given moment, I feel like if you look at the charts or just, listen to what's hot, there's always one or two guys or gals whose whole deal is just, I am an incredible singer.
'Cause all of me loves all of you. Love your...
Which, again, is not a bad thing. But it's dessert in music. It's not challenging, really. It's not challenging at all.
No, it's...
The only challenge is what the singer is accomplishing. And we're observing that challenge and, clapping our hands and putting up our little judge's number.
Well, look, you bring me to a great point here because it... Oh, boy, I'm just going to go ahead and say this. Mm-hmm. And this may be too early in the ep to come out this strong, but I just... I don't care. We are now, as a culture, I think that we treat music... like we treat sports. Because we treat everything like we treat sports. We treat politics like we treat sports. American Idol absolutely did exacerbate this. The Voice, these...
Right, which team are you on? Yes.
Yes, yes. Team Adam. Justin, yeah. Or Kelly, text in.
Mm-hmm.
but no, truly, it not only in the sense that... we are sort of sitting there cheering for them to hit that note.
Yeah.
Right? Just for the sake of hitting that note.
Mm-hmm.
But also, we are putting a lot of weight on, I guess I'll say it again, their athleticism, right? On their,
sure.
On the extremes of the human ability. How high can you go? How loud?
And this is, yeah, and it's not even really just, I'm thinking about how classic rock guys talk about, their favorite guitarists or
drummers.
I was
just going to say.
How fast can you play?
Exactly.
Or how,
yes.
How complicated of a riff can you play?
Yes.
Totally.
It's just these voices are a great example to me of how we are really kind of focusing on the wrong things. And there are always these examples because you're absolutely right. Who's the fastest electric guitar player in the world? Who's the fastest rapper?
Sure.
Right? All this stuff where it's as a novelty that is interesting.
Yes.
I suppose. But. Right. It is fully divorced from the tune.
Right. It's juggling flaming swords.
Yes. Fascinating, impressive, difficult, but what is the point?
Yeah. And boy, I really don't want to sound like a grumpy old jazz guy here when I say this, but we're dazzled by the fireworks of a crazy vocal run or a really... intricate guitar solo or a super fast, wow, Travis Barker can drum so fast, right? Things like this. We're dazzled by that. But buddy, listen, you and I, you know what we're dazzled by? Great songwriting.
I mean, yes, that's dazzling.
It's kind of, I'm really trying not to be to sound like some sort of snob here, but
no, I think, Tim, I think you should just go for it here. I've got your back. The Army's got your back because we have stated and restated already a number of times, this is no knock at all to phenomenal vocalists. I wish I was one, that would be great.
Sure.
But if we're talking about the tunes, We've got to say this, so go for it. Go
wild. It's just sort of this, like, writing a song and performing a song are two different things.
Mm-hmm.
They're two different arts, which sounds crazy because it's all music, ultimately, right? Like, it's all in service of the thing that a person ultimately listens to. But that that composition and production process is honestly, like, fairly divorced from the performance process.
Yes. I don't want to say more than it should be, because maybe that's baked in, but yes, mm-hmm. You're right.
Of course, like, great songs get recognition, and they often get performed by the, you know, amazing singers, amazing performers. Oftentimes they're both. Like, you know, there are plenty of examples of singer-songwriters who can do both incredibly well.
And there are plenty of examples of great songwriters who can't sing. I say, sure, Bob Dylan every couple weeks because he's got a terrible voice, but yeah, he's got some tunes.
So, right. The perfect example, exactly. And on the other hand, Matt, I have long kind of been, like, quietly just solo beefing with Carrie Underwood.
Ooh. You're not, it's not solo, buddy. It's a duo. I am with you. Talk to me.
She could hear those church bells ringing, ringing. And up in the loft, that whole choir singing, singing. Fold your hands and close.
Okay, she won American Idol because her voice is divine. It's a super duper voice.
Yeah.
She's phenomenal. The way that she can belt a high note is, I won't call it singular, but it is exceptional. And the way, I guess I'm, like, a little angry at her producers, but I also, like, think the buck probably stops with her.
Yes.
The way that her voice gets produced is so, like, the gain on the microphone turned as high up as it can possibly go before the mic blows out, where she is, like, letting loose a super powerful high note, to the point that the rest of the recording feels like it's drowning underneath it. I will give you the example of the song Blown Away.
I was going to just say.
Shatter every window till it's all blown away. Every brick, every board, every slamming door blown away.
Every time she gets to the syllable way in the phrase blown away, there is just, you can't hear anything except, like, the resonant frequencies of Carrie Underwood's vocal cords. It's crazy how loud she is on these recordings, and it's impressive. I'm impressed.
And it is also, buddy, because here's my, I don't know if this is your reaction to it in entirety, but I know she's got other tunes, whatever, but, like, the hits and the ones we're hearing, it is, I am so tired after listening to 3 minutes of a Carrie Underwood song. It's exhausting.
Yeah. It's tiring.
It's assaultive. Like, it is.
It's a decision for sure in the studio to put the voice so far forward in these recordings. And it kind of, to me, represents the, like, the problematic endpoint of the spotlight being too bright on amazing performance.
Okay. Talk to me briefly about that, because that triggered something in my head here that I want to discuss as well.
I mean, yeah, she's amazing. You listen to a Carrie Underwood song to hear Carrie Underwood sing. I just don't think there's a lot of interest in the studio, and probably on the part of the listener, in, like, anything else. What does the instrument sound like around her? What is the, you know, what's the quality of the songwriting? What's the song structure? What are the other timbres that I could pull out of this song? The only timbre I can pull is the specific sound that Carrie Underwood's voice makes, which, again, I will reiterate, is a beautiful, powerful, impressive voice. But I have nothing else that I can think about on these recordings.
Mm-hmm. There's no room, like you said, capacity.
That's what I mean by capacity. Like, there's nothing, there's no space for the mind to go anywhere else except that voice. And I think that is not great.
Now, okay, this is great. Because I know you just said it's not great, but this is great. Because I've come to a thought.
Yeah.
So these top charting songs, mm-hmm. Teddy Swims, Benson Boone, the boy.
Benson.
It's weird to me a little bit. And Tim, I don't want to draw any false correlations here, although it would be funny to do that and just get them wrong.
I mean, but yeah, go ahead.
This is just a perennial issue in pop culture. And when I say this, I mean sort of the focus and obsession on the voice, mm-hmm. on that, just that voice.
Yeah.
I mean, you think about, I don't really have a theory on this, but every like handful of years, there's a piano ballad that comes around and blows everybody away.
Yeah.
And it is basically usually the same four chords I mentioned before. Adele did Someone Like You.
Yeah.
Louis Capaldi, Someone You Loved.
Yes.
Just stripped down vocal showcases.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And I don't know if that's coming from something or in reaction to, but it always reignites in some way this interest, mm-hmm. in that, in just the voice. Because, Tim, have you ever seen the Kelly Clarkson show?
Buddy, I've seen enough clips of Kelly-oke to know that's probably what you're about to talk about.
Well, then that's all you... Yeah, that's it, because I haven't seen it either.
Sure.
But...
Seems like a lovely show.
Yes, it seems nice. It concerns me every time I see Kelly-oke.
Oh, okay.
Because these are always shared in the context of something like, okay, so that's what that song is supposed to sound like.
I think you're essentially quoting verbatim the reaction to Kelly's recent cover of What Was I Made For by Billie Eilish.
Ooh, that's right. That's right. I am.
I used to float. Now I just fall down. I used to know, but I'm not sure now. What was I made for?
But also so many other
things. But
this
happens, right? It happens every 2 weeks. Yes.
Yes. There's a running joke just that, you know, you should never let Kelly cover your song because she will do it better than you. And that's all well and good, I guess. Yeah. But I bet you can imagine, Tim, where my concern stems from. Because it's Kelly has an amazing voice. She
Incredible.
Is the American Idol. She's
yes,
the one
she
they
is.
Were looking for from the beginning. They found her right away.
Yeah.
And she's incredible.
Mm-hmm.
But she can make anything sound very, very good.
Yes.
She could sing you the alphabet song. She could
yep.
sing you the Russian national anthem. It would sound really good coming from Kelly because it just is going to.
Yeah.
And people believe then and are sort of... group conditioned, I think, to believe that is the way,
that's
ideal form of that song.
That's the measure of the goodness of a song.
Right. Bingo. Exactly.
Sure. She took an okay song and made it into an incredible song.
Exactly.
By the sheer power of her
exactly.
voice.
Exactly.
Yes.
And this is, yeah. And like, this is, I mean, this is why we got to be talking about this, because regardless mm-hmm. of Teddy and Boone and the American Idol situation and whatever new piano ballad we're getting from whatever British singer in 3 years, mm-hmm. like, this is it's a mild cultural, ripple that
yes.
is really, really happening. And it's just, I'm like, is that what people think it's music is and how you ought to listen to it by judging like reacting like sports?
Oh man. Okay. This most recent example, right, of What Was I Made For is one that really did like upset me kind of in a deep way. Like thinking this can't be the way that, you know, culture en masse is perceiving the quality of music, because the song, the Billie Eilish tune, essentially, in my opinion, like doesn't make sense with Kelly style belting, or not even belting, but just sort of like the quality, the fullness of Kelly's voice.
Yes,
it fundamentally like changes that tune, and I would not argue for the better.
What was I made for? Taking a drive.
No, agreed. Because I would say to him, like, Kelly, sorry to carry here, but Kelly has more restraint and taste in her performances.
Yes.
But, like you said, she can't help but be Kelly. Like, just the way her voice is the way it is.
And there's a clip going around of Billy talking about that song and actually saying...
Oh.
She says, well, I could have sung it like this. And then she models singing it with less of a whispery sort of patented Billie Eilish sounding vocal.
Da, 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 da. And instead it was like a... Da, 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 da. Could have literally done like a, I used to float and now I, but I was not, that's not what the song wanted, you know, and I could have gone, I used to float. There's so many ways I could have sung it. I had this.
Wow. Okay. And so you know what? She can sing.
She proves to her, like, she proves the point here. She's saying like, no, that's not how the song is meant to sound.
That's not what the song wants.
Right.
Like that. Right. That's, you need to be thinking that all the time. Yeah. All the time.
And I guess I come up, like Teddy Swims, Matt, his deal before going solo and topping the charts is he was a YouTube cover artist.
When the rain is blowing in your face and the whole world is on your case, I will offer you a warm embrace to make you feel my love.
Now, I this is not something I had in mind when thinking about this episode earlier, but, and so I don't want to jump too far, too fast, but I almost feel like the culture of, like,
YouTube cover artists. Oh, buddy.
Is a big part of the problem in a way. Like,
okay, taking, I like this.
Taking any tune, and often like taking and sort of an eye-popping tune, like, oh, they're covering that? How are they going to make it work this way? And just like doing acrobatics, taking any song to the Olympics and trying to get the gold medal.
Yes. What, buddy? 100%.
I think that's like not very good, actually. Like, I think that's
not very good.
It's indulgent, and I don't think
it's indulgent. It's, right.
It doesn't serve the art.
No. Because in a great example, in fact, is Lose Control, where Teddy does, in fact, lose control of the melody, such as it is. Right?
Yeah.
Like,
sure.
It's. When you're doing these melismas and these runs and these things that the rest of us cannot do, right?
Buddy.
And really like to hear, because he's got it. He's got control of his voice. I know that.
Yeah, absolutely.
But like, that's it though, right? And that's sort of all you can hear. And it's like an exercise.
Yeah.
Or, you know, at its, I suppose it's like a, you know, an Olympic performance at that point, but it really feels like you're just showing off what you can do with no regard to what's going on around you. That's not, Tim, you've played in jazz combos and bands. I've played in all kinds of bands. People, if you're playing with pros, they're going to get annoyed. Because, Tim, when you were, longtime listeners will know, you were stealing the spotlight back into your jazz days.
Yes, that's right.
I, as a young boy, I was obsessed with playing the fiddle and the mandolin just as lickety-split as I could. You can imagine. I was 200 miles on a freight train just gunning it.
Yes, whenever how fast I can this could. Boy play?
Yes, and I got very fast, and I can still play real fast. But my a nice older gentleman who was playing with me, sort of my Steve, Tim, at one point said, you don't need to play like every note all the time. Like,
yeah.
There's yeah. That leave space. Let this
Bluegrass
thing breathe.
Bluegrass is about the notes you don't play.
I mean, it is. I mean, it kind of is. I mean, everything is about the note. You can't. Capacity. Yeah. The capacity right. of a tune. You can fill it to the brim, fill it to bursting, dude. Like Carrie Underwood does. Mm-hmm. It just. You know, sorry to bring up yet another person, but my yang to Carrie Underwood's yin is like Freddie Mercury.
Oh,
here's
bro. Yeah, I mean, yes, keep going.
Okay, here's why I say that. Freddie, renowned.
Of course.
He's always in the top five of greatest singers of all time.
Yep.
I agree. I think he was unbelievable. But you think of Carrie Underwood singing a song like Crazy Little Thing Called Love. And then think about how Freddie did it. Freddie was... He was like...
He had a jazzer's touch.
Yeah, well, he was playful with it.
Yes.
He obviously was truly being theatrical and whatever else, but like he knew that the recipe, the song, did not always call for him to open his big old mouth and let it out like every time. He could dance around it a bit. He was doing some falsetto. He would cool the jets. He'd turn the heat down a little bit every now and then.
Yes, right. He'd give the engine a little rest.
Yes.
And as a result, Matt, those Queen songs have a ton of capacity for other interesting things.
And there's a lot of other stuff going on in a Queen song.
Right.
Yes.
If Freddie were just belting all the way through because he could, we know he could, it would have done a disservice to the rest of the music around him.
Yes. There would have been no point for it.
Mm.
But
if only we could all be like Freddie.
Well,
I mean,
no, Tim, look.
It's a great point, though, bro.
I didn't want to derail from your YouTube cover artist thing, because I think that actually is really, because this is like, stuff happens for a reason culturally, right?
And what is music, Matt? It's entertainment, you know, right? We're trying to numb the pain.
Right, of course. Just get through it.
Constantly. Right, exactly. So,
100%.
So, of course, we want to just eat sweets all the time. I get it. Of course I understand the appeal of, like, an amazing singer. But this might be another rabbit hole not meant to go down. But the song Tennessee Whiskey, Matt... What would David Allan Coe and what would Dean Dillon and Linda Hargrove think knowing that Chris Stapleton's wonderful cover of that song and his melisma, his incredible run on the word warm, and the line, you're as warm as a glass of brandy. You're as warm. What would they think knowing that everybody who covers that song now recreates Stapleton's run, which is, to be clear, an embellishment.
Yes, it's not.
What he was doing was embellishing a melody that existed.
Yes.
What would those songwriters think, knowing that that's now the gold standard, and like how the song must be notated essentially on paper and then performed back by every cover artist who takes a run at that song? Like, I just sort of think like we lose the plot a little bit.
That's not a rabbit hole. That's a supporting point. Yes.
Thanks. We lose the plot in what a tune is. Jazz players, Matt, don't get up on stage and like go play a song made famous by Coltrane and recreate Coltrane's solos note for note.
That would be insanity.
It would be insane. Yes. But I think we just kind of get lost in amazing vocals and think the only thing I can do is try to match or what, better it? Like, no. There's artistry in restraint, and there's artistry in reimagining.
Mm.
And I think it's easy, I guess, as a culture, to get stuck on an amazing bit of vocals and just sort of like treat it as the gospel. Like, this is how a song should sound.
Mm-hmm.
And if it doesn't sound like this, Kelly Clarkson should take a run at it and make
right.
it even better.
Exactly, because it's always going to sound better if Kelly sings it.
It's always going to be better if it's louder or higher or faster or more intricate or
yep.
or what have you. And I don't think that's right.
Tim, you are right.
It's not sports, Matt. You're right. That's the core of it, I think.
I think treating music
like sports is not a good way to do it.
Yes. No, that I think I really do think, with all that being said, like, to me it really does kind of center around the way that we culturally are desperate to treat things and the ways in which we prefer to interact that we're comfortable interacting with them.
Totally.
Right?
We want scoreboards, you know?
Yes.
We want poll results.
Absolutely. I mean, American Idol was a phenom. We all know this. The Voice, same thing. Star Search, even back in the day.
Yep.
NBC, a while ago, several years ago, tried to do a big primetime show about songwriting, about these songwriters, and they would pick the best songs, and kind of it was similarly structured to American Idol or any talent search.
Somehow I remember this.
Yes, well, look, because I was kind of enthralled, and I watched like a couple episodes. Uh-huh. You know what? Not compelling TV.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and nor would you think it would be. It doesn't exist anymore. But they had like some of the biggest working songwriters as judges.
Sure.
And it flew under everybody's radar because that's not sports.
No.
We're not there to watch the process. And I guess, buddy, that's fair.
You know, it is.
I don't begrudge us not like wanting to be in the studio with people.
Sure.
But at the same time, there's got to be a more mature or nuanced way to think about a tune than which freight train can run over it the hardest.
It's tricky though, bro, because like what's the most electric part of a show like American Idol or The Voice? I honestly think, Matt, it's when Ryan Seacrest says, "Text your vote." There is something thrilling about like running up a scoreboard, you know?
Yeah,
something thrilling about on The Voice, like beating the other team, you know?
Yes, yes, like, yes. They have teams. That's sports.
It's literally teams, yes. I understand the appeal. Like there's a real dopamine hit when three contestants enter and two leave at the end of the episode. That's thrilling.
And it's fine for what it is, but if in normal life we could just find a different way to engage with sort of the product of those types of shows.
The Mercury way, bro.
I was just going to say the Mercury way.
Freddy's way. Yes.
Tonight, I'm
gonna have my in all walks of life, I think we would all be a little better served.
Do it a little more like Freddy.
What would Freddy do? Ask yourself that in the ballot box. Ask yourself that everywhere. Ear Buddies. We'll continue in a moment. This episode of Ear Buddies is brought to you by Bath and Body Works, Matt.
Okay.
Matt.
Yeah. Hey, Tim.
Get comfy, light a candle, and prepare to press play on one of the most sensorial and highly anticipated partnerships of the year, brought to you by the makers of your favorite scents and entertainment. Today, Bath and Body Works announces a year-long partnership with leading streaming service Netflix to bring award-winning storytelling to life through the power of fragrance in the first collaboration of its kind for the brand. Matt, how does that all hit you? I'm reading directly from PR Newswire.
I can't imagine what's about to happen, but I'm with you. I'm locked in.
Well, Matt, Bridgerton is coming back pretty soon.
Okay.
Season 3 premieres Thursday, May 16th. And wouldn't it be nice if you could buy candles and other fragrance products inspired by scenes, characters, key icons, and moments from the show to capture its aspirational and vibrant aesthetic?
Is that what we can do now?
Matt, I'm reading word for word here. Yes, we can.
Okay.
That's what's happening. Bath and Body Works is making some sick new smells based on Bridgerton.
That is so perfect. Tim.
Matt, before you keep going, because I want to give you just a little bit more to chew on.
Okay, fine.
I'd like to read you a quote from Maurice Cooper, the chief customer officer at Bath and Body Works.
All right. I'm listening, Maurice.
Quote, "At Bath & Body Works, we aim to forever transform the viewing experience for millions of Netflix fans by allowing the power of fragrance to transport them like never before into their favorite stories and scenes. Scent," he continues, "is the most evocative of all of our senses. It heightens our emotions, experiences, and memories. And we want to take fandom for all those who love Bath and Body Works and Netflix to new levels through this inspiring new partnership," end quote.
All right. May I continue?
Yes, please do.
Okay. Now, on the one hand, this is so exciting for me because, Tim, you know me.
You're a big Bridgerton head, right?
Well, I actually have seen Bridgerton. Have you seen it?
I actually haven't, no.
Okay, it's visually stunning, and mm-hmm. it's pretty good, you know?
Sure.
But
it's big for you because...
Well, because I love Netflix, like everybody, right?
Right. Red-blooded American, of course.
Yes, and I've just been having a hard time watching it lately because there's something missing.
Is it the most evocative of all senses?
It literally must be, Tim, because here's what's happening, okay? I sit down to watch Squid Game.
Yeah.
I guess. Or Suits, let's
sure.
say.
Yeah.
I sit down to watch Suits, and I turn on the TV, and I look at it. There's my visual.
Yeah. Let's just set the scene a little more. It's dark.
Yes.
Right?
Well,
you dim the lights.
Right.
You
right.
turn up the volume.
Yes. You turn up the volume. You turn on the TV. So we have sight and sound accounted for, mm-hmm. and I'm in a comfy little outfit, you know?
Yeah, sure.
What? My touch. Pajamas. Touch.
It's working.
A blanket, a couch, you know, it's really, really working. Maybe mm-hmm. I got a little snack, some popcorn.
Yeah, I think
right?
you poured a drink, absolutely.
Yeah. So That's four of the five traditional senses locked and loaded. What's not there? Okay, so I'm watching Suits. Why can't I smell that boardroom? Why can't I smell those suits? I need cotton. I need hardwood. I need...
Yes, if I'm watching House of Cards, why can I not smell politics? You know, why can't I? I want to know what it smells like in the Oval Office.
In D.C., yes, absolutely.
In the swamp, right. give me that swamp-flavored candle.
Yes, light that thing and you are in the House of Cards. It's inspired. Tim, it's a brilliant marketing move. The one untapped market, and they locked it down.
Matt, this has the potential to be game-changing for specifically the stock price of Bath & Body Works.
Well, yes.
And Netflix. I mean, everyone's bread is getting buttered here.
Mm.
But if this works, Matt... And everybody's talking about Bridgerton, as they always are when it comes back. And everybody's saying specifically, hey, are you all watching this with the candles?
Yeah, like that sex scene is a lot better if you got that candle.
Have you put that in your diffuser? Because you guys, Bridgerton hits different when you can smell it.
Mm.
Oh. When you are receiving... In your nostrils, wafts of the scenes, characters, key icons, and moments from the show.
Yes.
They say virtual reality is like the next frontier of immersion. But I gotta say, Matt, I think
cracked.
It's happening in the most immersive of senses, in my nose.
Yes.
That's virtual reality to me.
To be able to sit there...
Keep your goggles. I'm not interested.
No. And you're right.
Give me a candle.
I mean, the price point on those things, too. I'm sure these candles and diffusers and colognes and perfumes are much cheaper. To be able to smell Edwardian revisionist society, like... Oh, man, what do you think they got? Like grass clippings and like horses? Or like...
Buddy,
I can't wait to watch
Peaky Blinders with this. I want to just smell horse slop. Like, put me there. Put me in the show.
Yes.
This is how we do it.
That's what's been missing. That's the thing. Maurice is right. It's not... and Oculus, and they've been chasing the wrong dragon.
And everybody has known about this. Matt, this is so... like. Stupid that no one else has figured this out sooner. Smell-o-vision. Like, we tried this.
Yes.
Way back in the day, and we just did not have the technology. But I would disagree, actually. I just think we did not have the will to do
this. That's right. Well, Tim, I've said on this podcast before that scent is the most evocative of all the senses. I'm sure you remember.
Yeah, I do remember this.
But it's true. And I just... The connection that we are going to have with Bridgerton specifically, and then I'm sure a run on the banks, a run on Bath and Body Works.
Oh, dude!
Everybody,
it's gonna be crazy.
Stock. It's going to cause the opposite of a recession?
whatever that is. Yes, it's going to cause that. Get your Love is Blind.
A boom.
Candles, you know? give me that Breaking Bad air freshener.
That's right. Yeah, I want to smell that body in the bathtub.
I can't wait for this, Matt.
I really can't either, and I'm really going to go and get whatever they are, whatever it ends up being, sign me up.
The Bath & Body Works Bridgerton collection launched officially on March 25th. It's there, gang. You can start, smelling the scenes and icons and memorable moments well before the show premieres on May 16th. This is the kind of corporate partnership that I think could change the world.
Mm. If any can, yes.
It's Netflix and Bath & Body Works. It's Bridgerton. It's your nose. Welcome back to Ear Buddies. And welcome back to Circling Back. The segment that, thank God we invented, man. It's for when we can just sort of finish a point that we started making weeks before.
Yes, and if any two pals need that, it's us.
Man, I want to throw it back to contemporary Christian music. A topic that I think we thoroughly covered a few weeks ago. The buzz, the chatter on that one has been nothing but positive. I think we've changed minds and hearts.
Yeah, seems true.
But something that I didn't say, that I'm sure I have said to you, that we've said to each other countless times over the years as buddies, is I think we can pin the homogenizing of contemporary Christian music from a sort of flexible and creative medium to a very kind of paint-by-numbers specific, boring genre of music, as we said.
And how?
I think we can pin it all on one artist. And I actually think we can pin it all on one tune. That, of course, is Fix You by Coldplay.
When you try your best, but you don't succeed.
Matt, there's a lot going on.
Tim, okay. I was...
Like, I don't think I need to really say anything else.
No.
And we will have circled back effectively. But I feel like we should say
Let's just kind of revel in this for a moment. Because, mm-hmm. Right, obviously, we could end this episode right now and everyone would know what we're talking about.
Right, totally.
But every single aspect of this song, which is a great, great tune.
Oh, an incredible song.
Unbelievable. But here's the thing about this tune. It was released in 2005.
Mm-hmm.
At the time, Stuff didn't really sound like this song.
That's such an important thing to say, Matt.
Yes.
Like, this, I think, gets pointed at as a, like, kind of the Coldplayist Coldplay song.
Yes.
But you gotta understand, folks, this was like new ground at the time in 2005.
Yes, that's vitally important to say, because there's a lot of, you know, it's been around for long enough and Coldplay has become not that cool enough to mm-hmm. where we can look at it, at this song in particular, as sort of just a laugh break, right?
And, yeah,
and
totally.
We say like, oh, you know, that one. Okay. Sure, I guess we can now, but this song did not age poorly. No, sir. What happened was it was emulated and blatantly ripped off, I guess, so many times and with such effectiveness and with such reach that, of course, we're going to look back at it and be like, well, that wasn't anything special. You're wrong. It was and is something remarkable.
Oh, bingo, buddy. You said it all perfectly.
Yes.
I mean, every component of this tune has been co-opted, I would say, by contemporary Christian music producers and writers and performers.
That's right.
And of course, what I think can only be described as a put your hands in the air and get ready to praise build up after the second chorus. And Matt, I'm going to get like hyper annoying about this. The chord progression here is a one chord, a major one chord, to a four chord, back to a one chord, which in classical music theory is called a plagal cadence, Matt,
mm-hmm.
because
amen.
it is an amen. It is church. Those chords are church.
That's right. That they work for a reason. I mean,
they work.
And this, yeah, Tim, we've been to, what, one Coldplay concert together?
We have, yeah.
This is where you put your hands in the air and cry.
This
I know
yes,
we did.
This, right. This moment is, like, It is spiritual.
Yes.
Right?
It absolutely is.
Tears stream down your face, Chris says.
How
when you
right
lose something
was.
You can't replace.
Yeah.
Tears stream down your face.
Tears stream down your face, and I will try to fix you. That's
Jesus Christ.
It's.
I mean, is this not a Christian? It's a, yeah, wow.
That's the thing, man. Like, it is. This is such a, like, it hits every single pressure point of inspirational power ballad rock.
Yeah.
That, of course, every single CCM producer in Nashville heard it and said, can we have one of these?
Yes, we'll be doing that. Thank you very much. They went to a couple of Coldplay concerts and thought, well, how to emulate this?
And it's, Matt, like, again, yes, we saw this live in a packed arena. The end of this song is, it's church in, but more specifically, it's a mega church. This is Hillsong United. This is the sound that we crave in Christian music now. It is the idea of a full stadium of people being changed and moved. It's,
buddy,
this is arena rock. The arena part of it is so crucial, I think.
Yes, oh, absolutely.
To how the formula changed in CCM. Yes. And I think you can point at this tune.
Buddy, here's what I think. I think that truly, like, not to praise Chris Martin and the boys too much, mm-hmm. but I think when it comes to this kind of song,
yeah,
this was the high watermark. 2005, Fix You on X and Y by Coldplay.
Yep.
It could not get better than that. Like, name me a better song like this than this, right?
Sure, you can't.
You can't top it. So it had, if it was going to continue, mm-hmm. and all the youth pastors insisted that it did, right?
Mm-hmm.
If it's going to continue, it has to get worse. And that's it, right?
Yes.
There's no developing, there's no expanding on a perfectly executed creative idea.
That's it. Dude.
In that sense.
That's it.
Like, it's game over, but obviously we've been dragging the corpse around since then.
It was a whoops on our part to not mention this song.
Yeah.
When we were talking about, we were diagnosing the problems with CCM. But, like, I honestly think this is the key to that unlocked 20 years of mimicry mm-hmm. on the
That's
part
right.
of contemporary Christian music.
You know what I like about our podcast, Tim?
Go ahead.
I like it's now, you know, 100 plus episodes in, becoming a lot more like episodic television where where you really do, like, because I'm realizing sure. now that the CCM episode is now over, but at the time it perhaps mm-hmm. was not.
Yeah.
And so circling back and see, I told you so, there's a lot of, you really got to kind of listen to all 100 plus to
yes.
really
it's serialized,
really get
yes.
in there.
100%, right. Oh. Right. This is what the last 10 minutes made no sense to someone who skipped that episode. So that's on you.
Yep, that's really, it's literally, we're doing literally all we can to get to you these episodes.
Talk to you later, buddy.
Talk to you later, buddy.